What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina of Sports Illustrated. Michael, this show is our last dance. As I mentioned last week, I will be exiting Open Floor after an awesome 5 years. You will take the reins going forward and continue this show's extraordinary legacy, or something along those lines, as we move into these playoffs. I am so grateful for all the Open Floor Globe members who emailed in, messaged in on social media. I wanted to have a show, Michael, where I kind of took some of their thoughts and their favorite memories and kind of did like a commemorative episode. But honestly, there was way too many to even do that. So what I tried to do was respond individually to everyone who reached out. Hopefully I got that done. I had a couple of cross-country plane flights to help me do that this week and going to and from the Hall of Fame. So again, a huge thank you. And of course, a huge Godspeed to you, Michael, as we go forward. After this, unceremonious ending. No, I kid. Michael, the good news for us, we've got an awful lot to talk about today, and you're going to have a ton to talk about later this week, because there was a wild and wacky final weekend of the regular season, setting up what to me is almost an ideal play-in tournament from the NBA's perspective. So what I thought I'd do is ask you 10 questions about the play-in round and the upcoming playoffs to kind of round up what we saw and forecast what we're about to see. How does that sound?
Beautiful. Can't wait.
Let me start with this question. We saw a lot of shenanigans, Michael. Teams dumping games, resting players, crazy tank-offs. Everybody's jockeying for positions, and that always happens, but it was more pronounced this year because we essentially went into Sunday when every team in the league played, and there wasn't hardly any seeds locked up before those games. So my question is, did anybody cross the line when it came to jockeying? Look, we all understand, hey, rest a guy here and there in the second half. Maybe you're not going, full out 100% in some of these moments. But were there any teams that raised the ire of the basketball gods by shamelessly trying to, like, lose games or manipulate matchups in a way that could come back to haunt them? What do you think?
I don't know if I would take it that far in my criticism, but the one team and the only team that really came to my head was the Clippers. They would be in, I would assume that they're in your crosshairs.
They did the impossible,
sure.
Michael. They lost to Houston and Oklahoma City, two teams that had barely won a game in the last month and a half. I mean, both those teams were so motivated to lose down the stretch for draft lottery positioning, and both teams are obviously very young and talent deficient, and somehow the Clippers still pulled it off. Incredible work.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, shout out to Poku on the Thunder, who was just KD mixed with Chris Paul at the end of that game. I don't know if you caught it, but it was incredible to watch his legend grow. I don't know. Like, a lot of people are suggesting that the Clippers ducked the Lakers by losing.
Oh, they ducked the Lakers, Michael. There's no question about it.
Well, so it's correct me if I'm wrong, but it's also possible that the Lakers lose to the Warriors and then beat the winner of Memphis versus the Spurs, and the Lakers then would get the 8 seed, right? And the Clippers have the 4 seed. So there's a possibility that the Clippers would still have to face the Lakers in round 2, slim as it might be. So I don't
there's a lot of shadow boxing going on, right? You can't really manipulate exactly what you want, cuz guys are just dancing around because of this plan. So there was two benefits to what the Clippers did, right? They fell from 3 to 4. So what that did is it set up a first round matchup for them with Dallas instead of Portland. And then it most likely put them on the opposite side of the bracket with the Lakers, assuming the Lakers beat the Golden State Warriors and stay at that 7 seed. And that play-in game, Steph versus LeBron, is on Wednesday. And I'm sure there's a lot of people with the television networks who are excited about having those headliners in the middle of this play-in weekend, right? So I think, look, if you're the Clippers and the Lakers somehow lose to the Warriors, then maybe you're not, like, afraid of them anymore, right? Maybe you're not even worried about them because, if they can't beat the Warriors in the play-in, then maybe they're not going to beat the Jazz in the first round, right? So let me ask you about the more immediate impact. Do you think it was a smart move by them to drop to play Dallas as opposed to Portland? Because Portland's actually gotten some real momentum going lately. They've been playing better with Nurkic and Powell in the lineup together with the star guards. there's always the idea that, like, look, if you're a team that chokes away leads in the fourth quarter, it would probably be better not to go against Damian Lillard in those situations. So was this also a benefit for the Clippers where, like, you know, they took care of Dallas last year? Luka's obviously going to be a problem. They're a deeper, more talented team than Dallas. Do you think that maybe they just preferred that matchup, or do you think this was a mostly Lakers-centric move?
I assume that the Clippers are pretty confident in their ability to beat the Mavs. They did last year. You know, Dallas has been up and down for most of the season, and I don't know. I think that the Clippers are right to feel pretty good about their chances in that first-round series, but as I was watching them against the Thunder last night, or their JV team lose to the great Poku, you know, I was aggressively rooting for a Clippers-Blazers 3-6 first-round matchup. Like, that's what everybody wants to see. That's like, Paul George goes out, you know, he shoots the three off the backboard. The corner three hits the side of the backboard in that Game 7 against the Nuggets last year in the bubble, and you have Dame and you have CJ on social media calling out Pat Beverly. Like, that is... that's the revenge series for, like, a lot of different people. I would love to see it. I mean, PG and Dame go way back with their beef. Like, having them square off, I think, would just be a lot of drama, a lot of theater. And a quick little byproduct there is that Jokic and Luka would go up against each other at the 4-5, which would guarantee at least one of them getting to the second round, which would just prolong, you know, us getting to watch those two gods play basketball for longer. And I just, that would have been the best case scenario, I think, for fans everywhere.
Yeah,
do you agree with me?
You and I are not the basketball gods, so we can't get angered, but maybe call us the basketball deacons. I'm pissed, man. The matchups would have been so much better the way that you described if we had Clippers, Blazers, Nuggets, Mavericks. I think it would have been just a lot juicier. It would have set up a potentially a better Final Four teams in the Western Conference and all of that. Clippers completely ruined it for everyone. Thanks a lot, guys. And, you know, the one angle I did like to their move, though, they already know that they're kind of the laughingstock team, right? That they've already got the... No, they understand that. Look, when you've had 51 years of struggles as an organization, they get it. They know their lot in life. There's no denial whatsoever. They're trying like heck to change that reputation, but they understand where they, you know, they're not Showtime. They're not the Lakers. So this is them just wearing the black hat and saying, who cares? We're going to be the bad guys. Go ahead. Everybody get mad at us for how we're handling this. We are going to lose to Poku, and you're going to like it, you know? Isn't that their path to the title, Michael? Isn't that just, you know, if the Clippers are actually going to do this, isn't it just sort of like, you know, a giant, you know, screw off to everyone? You know, like, we don't care what you think, us against the world. Like, isn't that sort of their pathway to actually getting over the hump? Like, they can't be caught up in worrying about what analysts say or, you know, people nitpicking them for being afraid of the Lakers or any of that stuff. Don't they have to be sort of like ruthless and calculating and completely uncaring about the outside world if they're going to do this?
I think you're giving them a little too much credit for buying in as villains. I mean, I don't know. They could have easily beaten the Thunder in that game. Like, it was, what was it, like a 2.1 possession game or something like that with 30 seconds to go?
Yeah,
I mean,
nothing was easy about that game, though, Michael.
No, it wasn't. And you had Luke Kennard basically asked to be Reggie Miller for the fourth quarter, which I guess that is kind of a form of punting on a competitive basketball game. But I don't know, man. Like, the Clippers are really good, and they should enter the postseason with a lot of confidence. They're getting some of their pieces back. Zubac is now the starting center. Everything's kind of clarified with the roles. I don't know. I think, like, the Clippers should head into this postseason feeling like a favorite of sorts. So I don't know if they need to, like, embrace the dark side to achieve their goal.
All right, fair enough. Maybe I'm laying it on a little bit thick. I will give them credit for this, though, Michael. Allowing Denver to bump up to the 3 seed and to just completely solidify Jokic's MVP case, right, by having that nice 3 next to the team name and the standings after it seemed like for a lot of the year maybe they were going to be 5 or 6. Just a phenomenal, extraordinary season for the Nuggets, and a little hat tip to the Clippers for giving them that little boost right at the end to make it just look all the better in the standings. Here's my second question for you, okay? Which play-in team was the biggest winner with all the craziness that shook out on Sunday, you know, in terms of the different results and who draws who? So just to clarify here, in the Eastern Conference, Boston is the 7, Washington is the 8, Indiana is the 9, Charlotte is the 10. So Boston and Washington are going to play for the 7 seed. Indiana and Charlotte are going to play an elimination game. And then the loser of Boston-Washington will play the winner of Indiana-Charlotte to claim the 8th seed later this week. Now, in the Western Conference, the Lakers are 7, the Warriors are 8, the Grizzlies are 9, and the Spurs are 10. So the Lakers will play the Warriors on Wednesday for the right to the 7th seed and a date with the Suns. The Grizzlies and Spurs will play an elimination game, and then the loser of Lakers-Warriors will play the winner of Grizzlies-Spurs to claim the 8th seed and a date with the Utah Jazz. So of those 8 play-in teams, after all this discussion we've had about the play-in, who's the biggest winner here? How do you see it? What do you think?
This was really easy for me to answer. It's the Washington Wizards. No question.
Because they get the wounded duck just limping in. Boston Celtics. They're going to take Boston out, aren't they, Michael?
It's you know, it's possible. I would say, you know, I would actually, even though the game is in Boston.
Wow, confidence just overflowing from Massachusetts right now, Michael. Well, you sound terrified. I
mean, what do you want me to say? Like, they have the two of the 3 best players in that game with Beal, who's on a tweaked hamstring, but looked incredible in that game against Charlotte yesterday. And Westbrook is...
I thought you were going to say Robin Lopez. I didn't know where you were going with that 2 of 3.
Well, look, like Robin, the Celtics don't have any answer for Robin Lopez either now that you bring him up. So it's just, it's really gross right now in Boston. So, like, I think a week ago, you and I thought that the Wizards, they had not technically clinched a play-in spot yet, but they were headed for the 10 seed just because the Raptors and the Bulls were so pathetic. And that's what I thought they would be. They would be the 9 or the 10. They'd play the Pacers in a must-win game and potentially lose, and then their season would be over. But instead, you know, they get an opportunity to, you know, even if they do lose to the Celtics, then they still get to play the winner of Pacers-Hornets with an opportunity to get the 8 seed and go up against a Sixers team that, in my opinion, if I'm one of these teams in the play-in, I'd much rather play the Sixers than I would the Nets. The Nets is just roadkill. Like, no one is beating the Nets in the first round, I'm sorry. Even though I've said this many times, I would love for the Wizards and for Russ Westbrook to have a chance at revenge in a 7-game series against KD and the Nets. That would be a lot of fun, and Harden. But I think that would actually work out best for them anyway, going up against the Sixers. But either way, you got to give it to the Wizards. And
no, you're totally
the
right here.
That they made on the final day.
No, look, they were the salmon sprinting upstream for the last 2 months, right? Just like bouncing. The water's coming back the other way. Everything else is going the other direction. Charlotte's losing. Indiana's losing. They just keep making up ground. It was unbelievable. Tail of the tape. Boom. They get that 8 seed. They're set up beautifully now to make the real playoffs, and it's stunning. And it really does, you know, make a lot of jokes at Russell Westbrook's expense or the Wizards' expense over the years. You know, hats off to them for, you know, caring when so few other teams were caring as much as they were here for the last month and a half. And it's about to get really interesting. Like, if you're Danny Ainge, Michael, do you already have a pre-written excuse if you lose this game, right? Because I imagine that New England sports media, and especially sports radio, is coming for you if you lose to the freaking Washington Wizards in the play-in round, right? Or, God forbid, you miss the playoffs entirely by somehow dropping games back-to-back. Do you, like, are you calling in the crisis PR management firm today? Like, there's no games here on Monday. Is the boardroom meeting today in Boston, like, how do we spin this thing if we lose? Like, is this a 6-hour meeting, or how do you handle this if you're the Celtics?
I don't think that anyone who's been watching the Celtics this season and who is aware of how good Jaylen Brown is will be surprised if the Celtics lose. So I don't think that a PR team is necessary. But I will say that if their opponent was the Charlotte Hornets and they lost, then that would be trouble. That would be the worst optics that the organization has faced in decades.
So if I'm getting this right, you want a statue of Jaylen Brown erected immediately next to, like, Paul Revere. right? I mean, is that what we're doing here? We're just like, we're going to just put it all on that injury, and that's going to be the storyline coming out if we do get a disaster here from the Celtics?
No, there's this statue of, I think it's George Washington in Boston Common on a horse. And it's just like, we're just going to take George Washington off and just put Jalen up on there. Like, that's what needs to happen.
Wow. Good spin. Good spin. I like it. Now I'm wondering if we're all underrating the Celtics. Have we plunged expectations so far that they're going to come through, win that game, and everyone's going to laugh? Your point about nobody wanting Brooklyn is a phenomenal point, right? So Boston, to me, has had a lot of Cancun vibes here, Michael. A lot of Cancun vibes for the last couple months. Do they dump this game against Washington so they don't have to face the Nets? Because that does not seem like it would be a fun matchup. That seems like it would be a sweep for the Celtics, gotta say. You know, Brooklyn's taking care of them real nice and easy. We saw it all the way back on Christmas, or at least the first week of the season. I don't think anything has changed. If you're the Celtics, you know, if you're Tatum, are you going all the way deep into your bag in this 7-8 game? Or are you maybe preferring taking your shot against the Sixers? Or are you maybe just preferring summer vacation? What do you think?
I mean, if I was a member of their front office, in the back of my head, I wouldn't think that a loss to the Wizards would be the end of the world just for that exact reason. Like, I would still rather just, I don't expect to beat the Sixers, but at least I have like a 3% or a 5% chance if everything goes right and Tatum just catches fire and averages like 45 a game, then maybe we have a chance. But yeah, with the Nets, there's just nothing. It's just not going to happen.
Well, that's why it's perfect for Westbrook, right? Because he does not care about any of this. He's like, if we win, we get in the playoffs. Let's do it. You know, exactly. Like, who cares? That's what it could be awesome. I do hope Washington wins that game because Brooklyn-Washington would be really, really fun. And if we got Philly-Boston as a rematch and just, like, see where these two teams are and look, you know, Simmons was injured last year. Brown's injured this year. Maybe it's a little bit of revenge for Philly. Maybe Tatum can, you know, still haunt you know, Philly's perimeter defense a little bit. I wouldn't hate that necessarily either. So you nailed it completely for my second question about who was the biggest winner. It absolutely was the Wizards. Honorable mention to the Warriors, who were also climbing up the standings for a lot of the season, got themselves into the eighth seed, and now have a great shot of making the playoffs. Even if they lost to LA on Wednesday, they would host the second round game against either Memphis or San Antonio. They just really took care of Memphis on Sunday. I mean, Steph had 46, looked unstoppable, and San Antonio's been sputtering. So there's a really good chance, you know, Golden State's going to be one of those final two playoff teams. And for given where they were, and Steph Curry said this actually on Sunday, given where they were in January and February with the questions about Wiseman and no Clay and everything else, it's one of those like heart of a champion pushes from Steph, and it's looking like it will pay off with a playoff spot here. But we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Who was the biggest loser of these play-in teams in terms of how it shook out? Was it the Boston Celtics just by virtue of some of these circumstances, or was it somebody else? Maybe it was the Lakers.
You know, maybe this is just from watching the game yesterday between the Warriors and the Grizzlies, but I'm going to go with the Grizzlies here because, you know, they could have had the eighth seed. It was, like, in their grasp down the stretch of that game. Getting the eighth seed would have been pretty significant, I think, for that organization. You know, you get useful experience of playing against LeBron and AD in a playoff-type atmosphere. And even if you lost that game, then you'd still get another shot at probably Golden State, or maybe it would be the Spurs, but whoever. And now it's just like, you know, I think that they will beat the Spurs, but they could lose that game and then just be out altogether. And, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is starting to look healthy and look really good. And Ja Morant is pretty impressive. And they just have this really young, exciting core. And I think the 8 seed would have done just wonders for their short-term future, more so than just like, I'm not even talking about the next couple months, but like the next couple years. I think that what that would have done to a lot of the pieces involved in the experience of competing on that level against such like the defending champs really would have been great for them. So them missing out on that opportunity, I think, will be an opportunity that they wish they could have had.
Talk to me a little bit more about Jaren Jackson Jr. I saw you had a tweet yesterday, Michael. You don't have to read your tweet live on the air, but that still was ridiculous,
beautiful.
Wasn't it?
It was so beautiful. I was just like, yeah, just give him all the defensive hardware for the next 10 years. I loved everything about it. Anytime a big man like that can move their feet and is like willing to really provide that type of effort against someone who has maybe the best handles in NBA history, like, you just got to give it to them.
Yeah, I watched that game on the plane back from the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and there was real KG vibes to that steal, wasn't it? Where it's just like quick hands, quick timing, comfortable, trusts his feet on the perimeter, reaches in, gets it clean, goes the other way. It's like, wow. Okay, Jaren Jackson. We've been waiting for this for a couple years. Love to see that. Good nomination by you. Are the Lakers losers here too, though? I mean, you know, LeBron was pretty upset about the whole idea of the play-in. Denver decides to dump their game against Portland, which basically forced LA into the seven. He comes out after the game and starts campaigning for Steph Curry, not Nikola Jokic, as this year's MVP. I don't think that was coincidental. That's, to me, felt like a little bit of salt at Denver for not, you know, winning that game against Portland so that the Lakers could move up in the standings. Just, I don't know. I mean, he was obviously trying to build up the stakes here before Wednesday, but maybe it was a two birds with one stone type of situation for LeBron, you know, like boost up Steph and make everybody talk about that game while also giving a little shade to Joker, who's clearly the MVP in my opinion. Now they've got to go against Golden State and Steph Curry. I mean, can Steph take down the Lakers? That version of Steph we saw on Sunday where he's shooting 30-plus times, moving constantly, playing 40-plus minutes, exhausting all the defenders who were on him, making poor Dylan Brooks, you know, probably the hardest he's ever had to work in a game, and then coming through with big shots late and just unbelievable two-man chemistry with Draymond Green. I mean, just seeing the game well before their opponents. Is this setting up for Steph to knock off the defending champs in the play-in?
Before I answer that question point blank, I just want to quickly point out the path that the Lakers have before them, and frankly, the path that the Warriors could have if they win this game. I mean, I think that the implications of this game are humongous.
They are, and hold on, let me just say, being here in Los Angeles, the conversation moved so quickly to, this will be the toughest path of any NBA title history. You know, everyone's freaking out about the seventh seed, you know, who they're going to have to go through.
Not even close.
Personally, I don't even think it's that hard, Michael, but go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm looking at the path, honestly, and if the Warriors beat the Lakers, you know, I'm going to pick the Lakers in this game because I'm not picking against LeBron in a single game elimination. Oh. Not an elimination, but you know what I mean.
Situation. I mean, Michael, what kind of an idiot would pick against LeBron, right? I mean,
yeah, I know. Seriously. Anyway, moving on. The winner of this game gets the seventh seed. So you're going up. This is no disrespect to any of these teams that I'm about to list, but we're speaking just, you know, relatively, comparatively. You get the Suns in round one. And I think, like, it wouldn't be the greatest upset in the history of the NBA if the Warriors beat the Suns in a seven-game series. Like, I don't think that that is impossible. After that, you get the winner of Denver-Portland. Portland's been up and down all season. Their defense is good when, you know, the starters are on the floor, but otherwise their defense is atrocious. They've been really good of late, but again, just an inconsistent basketball team. And Denver obviously does not have Jamal Murray. So if you're Golden State, I just want to talk about Golden State specifically because they're a little bit more interesting to me. Golden State could, like, would it totally stun you here if Golden State somehow ended up in the conference finals? I guess is like the moral of what I'm trying to say here and get through. Like, they could beat the Suns. They could beat the Nuggets in a seven-game series. Like, I don't think that they'd beat the Clippers then or the Jazz, whoever, in the conference finals, but even getting that far would be totally remarkable.
It would be insane. Look, I don't see that taking place, but I understand your point for sure. And that's kind of why I want to push back on this idea of, oh, the toughest path to the finals for the Lakers. The story this year in the Western Conference has been a lot of very good teams, a couple of teams flirting with greatness, but not really, you know, quite getting there or at least needing to still prove that they're on that level. And so when you're in this 7 or 8 range, like, yeah, there's going to be tough teams, but there aren't these overwhelming favorites that you're going to have to topple, these one seeds that are, you know, putting together like historic type seasons with all-time superstar level players. That's just not how this landscape lays out. And so to me, like, if the Lakers do win that game on Wednesday, and I'll pick them as well, I mean, they go Phoenix in the first round, to me, I've said for 2 months, Michael, that's their most favorable first round matchup.
They could sweep them, honestly.
I wouldn't go that far, but I like that energy from you because, you know, now I can tell the Celtics fans are really hurting when you're just picking Lakers sweeping. It's just like, oh, the world's on fire here. Everything's upside down.
It is. It is.
And then, like you said, second round's probably Nuggets. And either way, it's Nuggets or Portland, and the Lakers handled them in the playoffs last year, so they've got the experience factor, and there's no Murray. And then you only have to deal with one of the Jazz or the Clippers. And so, you know, from that standpoint, it's almost an ideal bracket for the Lakers, in my opinion. Like, this shook out pretty well, despite all their complaints and everything else. The trickiest part, though, of course, is they got to get there first. If they land in that 8 seed, then it does get, you know, a lot tougher, because now you're talking about going through Utah, right? And then, you know, the next round you're going through the Clippers probably. And then the next round you're probably going through the Nuggets. That's a much different path. So, you know, to me, I think that everyone needs to just cool the jets on the, like, you know, crazy Lakers, like, horrible path. This is going to be so difficult. Hardest title ever stuff. That's nonsense. But it does. It also does raise the stakes on that Wednesday game even more. The winner of that game, it's very, very important, you know, in terms of how these brackets lay out. And, you know, in terms of Golden State, like, let's say they do get the 8th seed. What would you predict them versus the Jazz in the first round series? I think I'd still take the Jazz, Michael, I got to say.
I would also take the Jazz, but I do think, based on how Golden State has played over the last 15, 20 games, and just the fact that they have Steph, who is, I mean, he's totally unguardable. It's just, I don't know what type of defensive coverage that they will throw at him, but they do have Rudy Gobert, and I would be very interested to see how they deal with, you know, or if Steve Kerr leans hard into the those high pick and rolls, those angle pick and rolls, attacking Gobert. I would be very fascinated to see just where the adjustments are from Quinn Snyder and how they deal with that, because Steph is on a completely different level right now. This is the best he's ever looked in his entire life. And you also have Draymond. And Draymond and Steph's chemistry, as we saw at the end of, in the fourth quarter of that Memphis Grizzlies game, on Sunday, I mean, they've been great all season together and for the past several years together, but it just seems like they're getting better and better. It looks like Draymond just has eyes on the back of his head, and he knows where Steph is at all times.
No, it was invincible mode on Mario Brothers, right, where your body starts to, like, turn orange and, like, just nothing can stop you. I mean, that's how they were playing, and I mean, they're so good with the counters, you know. It's like, all right, well, we're gonna defend you topside so you can't get the three. Well, then the cuts and the passes into space are just perfectly timed, perfectly touched. It's really, really fun to watch. They're going to be, you know, a Jazz-Warriors series would be awesome. You know, all the complaining I was doing earlier about how the Clippers screwed up the matchups in the middle of the bracket, I would be very interested in not only Lakers-Suns, but Jazz-Warriors. So, to me, that's kind of the best-case scenario for how this could shake out. Let me ask you, you know, now that we've gotten so deep into this Lakers Warriors hype fest, and that's going to be a big game on Wednesday. There's no way around it. I wrote about it for my newsletter this week. People can check that out at the Washington Post. Do you think this seals it officially, like the play-in's here forever? Like, if we got, you know, a month of more intense basketball in the run-up to it, you get Lakers Warriors as the play-in game, you get a pretty interesting Boston Washington play-in game, all things considered. And you just get people talking on the last weekend of the season. Like, I thought maybe the biggest screw-up, Michael, was they didn't have more of the games on Sunday on national TV, right? Like, they should have had, like, half of those games on either ESPN, like ESPN2, maybe had an ABC game. And, you know, maybe Clippers, you know, Clippers Thunder could have been on NBA TV6. I mean, we didn't necessarily have to have that one on a big audience, but they almost should have made a bigger deal about the final day of the season from a television broadcasting standpoint, because there was so much interest around it yesterday. Is this whole concept of the play-in here forever? Like, is this going to be something we see again next year? I would say yes. What about you?
I think that the play-in is not going anywhere for the foreseeable future, for a million reasons. Everything that you just outlined, it's super exciting. It forced organizations to make the decision of whether or not they would embrace the lottery or they would embrace this opportunity to reach the playoffs. I think a vast majority of organizations chose trying to make the play-in. Not all were successful, but I think if you just look at the decisions that they made as coaching staffs and as front offices that that's what their intention was. And that also, you know, you got to look at the other side of the coin there too. If you are a 4 seed or a 5 seed or a 6 seed, and normally you would just kind of be resting and not really taking the regular season that serious, like you had to like bust it down the stretch because you did not want to fall into that 7 hole or that 8 hole and be in the play-in tournament. So it's just, it's undeniable. I don't think that it has cured like the lottery and tanking and all of that. But it's
definitely has not. It has not. And we should point that out, too. I mean, what the Thunder and the Rockets have been up to here for the last 2 months, even the Pistons, the Magic, it's insane, their records, like post-All-Star break. And I think that got completely lost in the shuffle. So it did not fix the tanking stuff, but it did help. I really think it did. You know, it kept teams like Chicago, Toronto somewhat engaged, right, down the stretch. It kept Indiana and Charlotte with something to play for. Memphis, San Antonio, New Orleans, even Sacramento all had stuff to play for this year. So that part worked. But I think it just shrank the pool of teams who are punting, right, by pretty considerably, almost by half, really.
I think Sacramento actually thinks that they still have a shot. And someone should probably tell them that they don't and that their season is over, but which is just a whole bummer for the Sacramento Kings. In an ideal world, we would get to watch, you know, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander play basketball. And we didn't really get to see that because of how the Oklahoma City Thunder were treating the back half of their schedule, which is understandable. But yeah.
Do you remember Al Horford? He used to be in the NBA.
No, actually, I don't. Can you tell me who that is? But I think generally, yeah, like you saw, I think it was more exciting to see the, even though it didn't work out for them, like the Chicago Bulls make a blockbuster trade. And they would not have done that, I don't think, if there wasn't the plan to get Vucevic. And so, I mean, that's just one small example, but I think that, you know, competitive basketball is a good thing. This season was very strange and abnormal. I think going forward, the regular season as a product will be better because of the play-in. And look, the fact that we get Lakers-Warriors as, I know it's, I wanted to call it an elimination. I don't know what to call this game because it's not, because the loser still gets to live on. But
win or go home, but not all the way home.
But exactly. Great. Wonderful marketing ability by you. But we could have honestly spent a whole episode talking about this one matchup.
Yeah.
It's fascinating on so many levels. Like, is AD going to start at the five? Is, like, are they going to, like, how much pick and roll is Steph going to run with Draymond? Who's LeBron going to guard? Like, it's amazing. The in-game adjustments we're going to see off that between Vogel and Kerr are going to be fun. It's just,
how
it's
many
great.
Players are going to defend Steph at any given time? 3, 4? Can we get the entire team surrounding him? It's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that game. Does that game kind of feel like our reward as basketball fans for just putting up with the pandemic? It kind of does. I mean, honestly, it's like, look, it's been a long, long 14 months, right, since that March shutdown. I feel like it's the payoff. And, you know, I know LeBron's still a little salty about it. That's fine. Steph was not. He looked elated to get them into that 8 seed. And that was even before they knew who they were going to be facing in that game. But just his passion, you know, ripping the jersey out of his shorts, you know, pulling it up to his chin like Baron Davis.
Iconic. It was iconic.
That's what the NBA is all about, right? And we've been through a whole bunch of tough months here with not great basketball, not super reliable lineups from a health and safety protocol standpoint and everything else. And the idea that we're getting really the two marquee names, I would say, in terms of, like, you know, defining players from the last decade, guys who've faced off in the finals 4 separate times in this matchup, it's going to be great. I cannot wait for Wednesday night.
I have a quick question for you going back to our last episode, or was it 2 episodes, when we were talking about the guys who we think are facing the most pressure heading into the postseason. And understandably, neither of us said LeBron because he's solidified as one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest player ever.
What are you saying? But 30's applying a little pressure here. No, he's got to beat 30 a little bit.
No, I mean, like, you know, I'm just fast forwarding in my head to a world where the Warriors beat the Lakers, and then the Lakers are just like in this dogfight with the Grizzlies in the fourth quarter, and it's just like, what is going on? I think that that is not likely, but it's possible for sure. Like anything could happen in an NBA where just like the 3-point shot rules everything, and the Lakers don't have a lot of 3-point shooters. Like that would be phenomenal. And so I don't think that LeBron is facing a gargantuan amount of pressure along the same lines as some of the other names that we talked about. But do you think there's any pressure here at all? Like, what is the pressure?
It's a great question. I mean, I look back at some of the Lakers analogs from years past. Like, remember when Bynum just lost it and just like started knocking people out of the air during that playoff series, or Dwight Howard got ejected? Like, there really wasn't a lot of pressure until it just all landed at the end, and then it's just like kaboom, it goes crazy, right? Mm-hmm. To me, that's the situation the Lakers are in right now. Going into this play-in, I don't think that there's actually a ton of pressure on LeBron. Don't think he has a lot to prove. Obviously, you know, there's going to be kind of a notch in your belt for whichever one of these stars wins that game. But if they did get into a situation where their play-in fate is looking dire, and you know they're down 12 against Memphis, you know, and they're not going to be able to get the eighth seed, the catcalls from social media are going to ramp up so fast, right? And the talk about Washed King is going to come back, and like, you know, there is a large population of people who are just kind of like laying in wait to criticize LeBron. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they're not actually that big of a percentage contingent, but they are loud. They love to tweet Lay Mickey and all sorts of dumb stuff. and they will be ready to go for sure if there's, you know, turbulence here during the play-in. So I would say no pressure still right now, but that it could ramp up. You know, it could be a 0-100 type situation. All right, Michael, let's get through some of these other questions I had for you on our list. What about this idea of the Cancun potential here? Because I mentioned this earlier, maybe with Boston, but there's a couple other teams I could see just sort of being like, wow, like playoffs sound pretty hard. Summer break after such a long season sounds pretty awesome. Talking with people at the Hall of Fame this weekend, that was a recurring theme. Man, players are tired. You know, players are, wheezing to the finish line. You know, obviously on certain teams, they're really happy to be, you know, getting to the playoffs where the games actually count. And I think you saw that with Brooklyn. It was not some coincidence that they're putting on a Harlem Globetrotters end-to-end phenomenal highlight play on the last game of the regular season, right? It's like it's go time for some of these teams. But for other teams, it's just not. I remember talking to the guy who designed the play-in or one of the people at the NBA who designed it, Evan Wash, and he said his big concern was like, well, what if we get to these games and we've seen so many blowouts, we've seen so much three-point shooting and high-scoring games this year, what if one team just lays an egg, and what if the other team just, it's a blowout, and all of a sudden we're looking at, I don't know, call it Charlotte versus Indiana, and it's a 25-point game at halftime, and everybody's like, oh man, this game sucked. Like, do you see any teams out there that have that Cancun potential where, like, we're going to get up to Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday and be like, wow, we were so excited on Monday for this, and boy, it did not really turn out how we thought it would. Any teams on that list that strike your attention?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, watching the Pacers versus the Hornets, if the Pacers fall down by like 12 in the second quarter, the Pacers are going to lose by 45 points. That's just what's going to happen, because this is an opportunity for them to, there's a lot of reports about how they feel about their head coach.
Yeah, this is a real opportunity for Nate Bjorkamp to do one of those third quarter interviews where he just roasts his team. It's like, yeah, all these snitches been going to the media about me. Like, you know, like he could kind of get the last word if it goes south. Maybe they could have a fight between the assistant coach and the players, like almost happened earlier this year. There's some combustibility potential, I guess is what I'm getting at. And of course, I've got my tongue in cheek with some of this stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Pacers are one team that I could see, you know, if they were down at halftime, just kind of being like, I'm going to check out now, and that's fine. It's not even like if we made the playoffs that we would have a chance in hell against the Sixers or the Nets or whoever. Like, it's been such a nightmarish season for a lot of teams, and the Pacers are on that list. They've really battled a lot of serious injuries, and watching Nate McMillan give maybe the coaching performance of the year on aggregate after you let him go and replace him with a different guy is tough to swallow if you're the Pacers. And I was watching, this was pretty recent, it was a Pacers-Hawks game, and the reaction that, I think this was before the report started to come out about Nate Bjorkgren, but like the former Pacers, their reverence for Nate McMillan was like they were like running up to him after the game, giving him high fives, laughing, hugging. Like it was pretty funny to see. It's just like you don't know what you have till it's gone type of situation for them. So I could
there was
see
only,
the Pacers being
there was only
done,
one yeah. Nate in their heart, you know, and that's really what it boiled down to.
Exactly.
Well, let me flip it. I mean, are we sure Charlotte's not already on vacation, Michael? I mean, they've lost five straight. I think people forget about the Hornets because they just watch the LaMelo highlights, and those are always fun. But they've lost five straight, stumbling in, needless to say. I mean, they should have been way higher up in the standings. There was a time, Michael, not that long ago, where they were potentially like fighting for that 4 or 5 seed. I'm sure you remember that. Gordon Hayward hasn't played since early April. I think everybody's just completely forgotten about him. And I do think some of the criticism about, you know, Boston's decision what to do with Hayward, well, look how many games, you know, Charlotte got out of him this year. I do think, like, after taking the entire season on balance, like, you know, it wasn't as massive of a loss as it looked, you know, back when he was playing like an all-star earlier this year from the Celtics standpoint. Look, I'm just trying to be polite on the way out, you know, for the poor
Celtics fans.
No,
thank
you
for giving some credit. Yeah, give some credit to the Celtics.
No, I wouldn't say it's credit. I would just say it's less damage is all I would really say. I mean, this game, this Indiana-Charlotte game, it does have kind of like this could be a rough watch potential, right? I mean, Indiana's 34-38, Charlotte's 33-39. Really fair case to be made that neither one of these teams should be viewed as playoff teams, quote-unquote, given those records. So are you anticipating just something brutally bad? And will you watch? Let me ask you that.
Oh, of course. Will I watch? Come on. Like, it's got to watch everything. I've watched – if I watched the Pacers play a single game in the regular season, I'm going to watch this play-in. Trust me.
Okay, I guess I asked that because, you know, guys like Charles Barkley, you know, and he's speaking for, you know, some portion of America. I mean, when he was laying out this bracket, I don't know if you saw this clip, but he was just like, yeah, so then this loser plays this loser and this loser plays this loser. And, like, he was just, like, completely mocking all these teams for how bad their records were. And I've got to say, I don't really want to watch Indiana-Charlotte. I will watch it. Like, it means something. Mm-hmm. I do think Boston and Washington are going to be the two teams that come out in those playoff spots, right? And if Boston doesn't, I will laugh so hard. But, you know, I think it's a fair question to ask. Like, is this even really worth anybody's time? I think that's a fair question.
I'm just thankful that we don't have to do any more episodes because Boston's probably not going to make the playoffs, and I couldn't even bear to hear you laugh in my face.
It's my legacy. You're going to be burned with it forever. You're going to wake up in the middle of the night, Michael, and you're going to be thinking, God, Ben's making fun of me for this somewhere silently, and I can't hear it. So I guess on the other side, too, with Memphis-San Antonio, that one's got a little more juice, though, right? I mean, San Antonio has also been struggling here down the stretch. I think they lost their last four games of the regular season. They're 33-39. But there's intriguing players. You know, they made a little bit of a push in the bubble with some of their young guys. I mean, I think they'll respond pretty well to the do-or-die format. And this idea of, like, Ja versus DeJounte, like, I'm watching that, right? You know, just even if it's only like a touch point for where are those players going to be 2 or 3 years from now. I'm intrigued by that. And the Grizzlies play super hard. I mean, you mentioned that on Sunday, like, you know, Steph was going bananas, but they did not roll over. You know, they were giving it back as best they could. And they had a tough schedule to close the season, road heavy compared to Golden State. So, you know, I just like their competitive spirit, love their coaching staff and how they spread the ball around on offense. So I'm watching that game too. I really think the weakest links here obviously are the East 9 and 10, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And just to jump on and talk about Grizzlies Spurs, I think that game will be a lot of fun. You know, you mentioned how the Spurs have played of late. I think, you know, a part of that has to do with they've been resting guys en masse down the stretch here just because they're already thin, for one. You know, they have a ton of injuries. Derek White, most notably, is out for the rest of the season with a sprained ankle. And their schedule was the hardest after the All-Star break by far, I think. And the Memphis Grizzlies weren't far behind. It was just like extremely truncated for those two organizations because of the COVID postponements before the All-Star break. So, you know, maybe I think that we saw both those teams definitely not at their best on a night in, night out basis in the regular season, particularly in the back half. So I think, you know, both these teams and organizations have a lot of pride. They have a lot of young talent that isn't going to, I don't think there's a Cancun possibility here with either of these teams, either of these rosters. And it'll be fun, honestly. Like, I've watched a ton of Spurs basketball this year for a reason, and I've watched a ton of Grizzlies basketball. There's so many fun players on both teams. This one's going to be fun, even if neither one is likely to actually make the playoffs.
Michael, I tip my hat to you. It's a great point on their schedules and the disruption for those two teams in particular. They're both better than their record. I think that's completely fair to say, and so I'm looking forward to that one. Let's talk about the teams on the outside looking in, because there were some pretty, pretty sad teams that didn't make this thing, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, the last teams out in the East, Chicago, Toronto, the last teams out in the West, New Orleans, Sacramento. You know, everybody was joking at the start of last year's play-in of like, oh, they just designed this to try to get Zion on TV. And I guess actually that wasn't a joke. I mean, that really was what they were trying to do. They brought it back this year, expanded it even larger, and Zion still doesn't make it. Not his fault, obviously. It's a Pelican situation. And Zion, unfortunately, got injured down the stretch, which did really impact New Orleans' ability mm-hmm. to catch San Antonio. But of those teams, you know, New Orleans, Sacramento, Chicago, Toronto, like, kind of who is the saddest? Who's going to be watching this game through tears from home, or should be anyways?
I mean, you know, we talked
or about nobody. This. I mean, maybe they just don't deserve to be there. That's a fine answer too.
No, I mean, there's 30 teams in the league. 10 of them. We're talking about 10 teams here that weren't good enough to make the play-in. All of them are really bad. For, you know, some reasons they couldn't control. Like, I think the Raptors just a nightmarish season for the Toronto Raptors that would have done any organization and if they were under the same circumstances. You had the Rockets with how their season started. Some of these teams are just straight up rebuilding, and we knew that they would be bad the whole time, so whatever. But the one team that I just, you know, I wish was in the play-in because it would have been exciting, and I guess it wouldn't have been as exciting because Zion is hurt and maybe he wouldn't play. I don't know, but the Pelicans is my answer, with the caveat again that it would involve a healthy Zion Williamson. I don't really care about the Pelicans unless Zion's playing. So I guess they're the answer for me. I guess the other possibility would be the Bulls. And the Bulls have been kind of frisky when healthy a little bit. But, you know, Zach LaVine missing 11 games in April and early May due to the health and safety protocols just kind of submarined their season after they traded for Vooch. And it was a big bummer for them, obviously, because they don't make that trade unless they think that they can make the play-in at least. So I guess those would be the two teams that are particularly depressing for me as I kind of look out at these 10. But I guess like they're all also depressing for their own reasons.
No, all four super duper sad. I mean, look, I was disappointed in the Pelicans, you know, at various points throughout this season. And I think I unfortunately took a lot of that disappointment out on Brandon Ingram. It was not only his fault. I mean, the guards were rough, no shooting. Lineup constructions really didn't make sense. I did see some comments from David Griffin pledging that, you know, a lack of shooting will never be a problem again going forward.
Yeah.
So can't wait to see how many future firsts he's going to be trading for, like, Kyle Korver or somebody like that, just to address that. I kid, of course.
Can I throw in something to get it on the record?
Please. Oh, you got a prediction?
Yeah, I think that they're going to trade for Kristaps.
Ooh. Okay, what's the package look like?
I haven't thought that far ahead, not going to lie, because this literally just popped into my brain, but it makes a lot of sense to me. Like, I get that big guy in the middle who can block shots, doesn't have to be a great defender, but he can shoot threes and space the floor for Zion. Point Zion running pick and roll with Kristaps is like the most unstoppable offensive sequence in basketball history. I think that that's something that they could explore. I think everyone's been talking about Miles Turner as the guy that the Pelicans should target.
I certainly have been.
Yeah, and that one makes sense as well, but you know, I think that shaking it up with someone like Kristaps, who they could get potentially based on his health history.
Well, and they got a million picks, and they got a bunch of flexible contracts. I mean, they could definitely put a deal together. It just depends on how high the price gets. I really like that idea, Michael. That's a good one. It's a very interesting one. It would be great for the media guy, too, you know? Like Kristaps just towering over Zion. Zion like four times as wide in the shoulders compared to Kristaps. Just brilliant, brilliant. I'm into it. That would certainly be better than what we've watched this year, and it would be a lot less sad. I got to go with the Bulls, though, man. The Bulls were sitting pretty. I heard for a month and a half straight from the Zach LaVine stands out there, oh, this guy's this, he's this, he's this. They wound up finishing the season 31-41. Not all his fault. He did get injured, and they were clearly horrible without him, no question about it. But you look at some of these teams that did make the play-in and the Bulls didn't. I mean, Charlotte, Indiana, even Washington. I mean, they started so slowly. Like, that was a situation where, like, if you're actually a good team and you have this star-level leader, you should be in the play-in. For Chicago to, you know, get all that buzz trying to go and then make the Vucevic trade like you mentioned earlier and then just have that thing sputter in their face. I know they're young. I know there are better days ahead, but there's also some more expensive days coming, you know, in terms of paying Zach and trying to decide what you want to do there. The fact that they couldn't even get in the top 10 is wild to me, and I don't think it should be forgotten. They sort of landed right in the worst possible spot, and there is some salvage play here. Like, you know, if they wind up getting like a top 4 seed in the lottery drawing, then at least they have a good pick to show for it. They don't have to send that over to Orlando in that trade. So there is a way they could backdoor into something pretty special and get a really nice player for the future, but if that doesn't happen, they give up their pick and they sit here looking up at the Hornets, who didn't have Gordo or LaMelo for big stretches of the season. I mean, come on. That's pretty sad.
So for Bulls fans, real quick, I'll just say that the pick that they gave to Orlando for Vooch in this year's draft is top 4 protected, and they have a 20.3% chance of getting into the top 4. So not great.
Okay, Chicago. So what you're saying, Michael, is, you know, flip some coins, make sure you've got some lucky rabbit's feet, four-leaf clovers, whatever it's going to take, because if that pick goes, that's rough, Michael. Even you can admit that. I know you were defending that trade the whole way through, but this would be the worst-case scenario for that trade.
No, I mean, also, you know, when I'm defending that trade, I didn't think that they would miss the play-in.
That's what I mean. It's almost incomprehensible. They're the saddest team on the outside looking in. All right, a couple questions here to wrap this thing up. We do know a few of the matchups. We discussed them earlier. Denver versus Portland, Clippers versus Mavericks. We've got Milwaukee versus Heat, and then Knicks versus Hawks. What is your favorite of those matchups, and what is your least favorite of those matchups?
So I think for favorite, just as someone, you know, in terms of just stakes, like Bucks Heat is the default answer. I don't
Correct.
Know like if there's any arguing that, of course. Like this Heat team, you know, I think about them in this context here where, like, they were not willing to give up the farm for James Harden, and, like, what would they look like if they did, given some of the young pieces in that organization that haven't developed, I think, as quickly as they thought. And now you might be out in the first round because you're going up against a much better Bucks team and more equipped Bucks team than the one that you upset last year, and you're just kind of wasting Jimmy Butler's prime, honestly. Like, this Heat team, if they go out in the first round, would be such a shame.
Harsh. I mean, they were in the bubble until October. Isn't this a write-off season for them? They don't have the world's best talent. They're trying hardest. I mean, I get what you mean about Jimmy's age, but, like, I give them a little bit more of a pass than you're giving them.
I mean, look, I speak with a ton of respect for everyone in that organization, and I'm a believer in Heat culture and all that. I think it really matters, and Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, the fact is, like, you don't get asterisks for stuff like just you stayed in the bubble longer than every other team except the champs. Like, it's just that's not how it works. So what you ultimately did was waste a year of Jimmy Butler's prime, in which he had the best season of his career. And I don't know how many more years Jimmy's going to have like that. So I don't know. To go out in the first round with the talent that they have would ultimately be disappointing regardless, and they caught a matchup that it's going to be tough. I mean, they can beat the Bucks. I don't expect them to. It's possible. That series is going to be fun regardless, and they do have, in my opinion, two of the three best players in the series with Bam and Jimmy, Giannis being the best player. But it's just it's kind of a bummer for me. So I'm going to go with my favorite as my favorite first-round matchup.
So slow down before we move
on. Okay.
Look, it's not that dire in Miami. They got like 300 days of sunshine, palm trees, beautiful glittering causeways. Like, okay, it's going to be all right. Okay, first of all, I would say that number one. I get your point for sure about, you know, Jimmy's got a clock ticking, you know, and we don't know how long his body is going to allow him to play at this elite level, given how many minutes he logged earlier in his career. And just his style of play being so bruising, so physical, and not really dependent upon the three-point shot. So that does make me a little bit nervous. At the same time, I'm not giving them a full asterisk, but I will give them a pass. If they go out in the first round, I think circumstances played a monster role in it, not only because of the bubble, but because of how many guys they had injured or out earlier this season as well. So I will not be... Well, the Oladipo trade actually just completely blew up in their face. So that was... That was, you know, kind of, but it was also a little bit desperate at the time. And I think we said that too, is like, you know, what are you really, you know, kind of banking on here? What's the plan? So I will not be hard on them if they lose this series. The reason why I love this matchup, and I agree it's the best one that we know so far, this is the referendum on the Jrue Holiday trade, right? Like, you needed somebody else late in games to help Giannis. Miami brilliantly exposed that. You needed another backcourt defender who you could kind of trust to play big minutes because, you know, Bledsoe would give you something defensively, but he was just so erratic offensively. His minutes were always just so up and down and you know, kind of closing your eyes while you're watching it. Jrue's been an awesome fit. You know, he's going to get all defense for sure. He earned the contract extension. He's just done pretty much anything they possibly could have wanted from him this year. He's been that guy. And so now it's time to, like, prove it with these stakes. The whole organization decided, look, Jrue is our path to greater postseason performance, and here you are gifted with the exact matchup to prove it, right? If it doesn't work, that is, like, existential questions for the Milwaukee Bucks, right? That would be a brutally painful first-round exit if they lost to the Heat after all of this, and it would probably mean, man, Coach Bud is gone, right?
Probably. Yeah, he's fired probably the next day, I would say. But I really quickly...
So that's fun. That's stakes. That's big time. That's big time pressure. I love it.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's like I think this Bucks team is really good. And as you were talking, I was thinking about how maybe it could be a blessing in disguise to play a team like Miami in the first round and really just like have conference finals intensity in the first round. Whereas the Brooklyn Nets are going to be going up against either the Celtics or the Wizards most likely, and they're just going to spank them, and their starters are going to play like not even close to as many minutes as they otherwise would. And I wonder just like what the adjustment period would be for a Nets team going into that second round, theoretical second round matchup against the Bucks, which that's the series that it looks like we are on track to get and is going to be incredible. I wonder if the Bucks are at some kind of an advantage if they were to come out of a series against a team that is just so much better than the team that the Nets will have to face.
It's an interesting read. You know, it goes back to like the toughest path for the Lakers and all that stuff. If Milwaukee has to go through Miami, Brooklyn, Philly, and the Lakers to win this title, that is a ridiculous path, right? That's like as tough of a path as you could construct. And so I wonder, is there maybe some short-term benefits in the second round that wind up catching up to them down the road? Or are they just going to take care of Miami? Look, they played it there, you know, towards the end of the regular season. Milwaukee looked, you know, very dominant in that game. They are better, I think, constructed from a matchup standpoint against the Heat than they were last year. Miami is missing some key players from last year's group that gave them really good minutes, particularly Jay Crowder, who I don't think missed a shot against the Bucks in that entire series. So I'm actually taking Milwaukee in that series pretty comfortably. But if they don't get it done, that's where the other shoe drops in a really big-time way. So that's an awesome series. What was your least favorite first-round matchup of the four, quickly?
Well, before I say real quick what my least favorite, my least favorite was Clippers Dallas, and I don't really have a lot to say about it. That's why it's my least favorite.
I'm with you. I mean, they're both two really slow teams. We saw them last year. I think Dallas, I mean, you could argue, did they really take a step forward from last year compared to this year, right?
No, they didn't.
And Clippers kind of sidestepped as well. And so we saw a lot of the shenanigans the first time around. It was fun to see Luka kind of get picked on and bullied by some of the Clippers vets, right? Probably going to be annoying the second time around. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, we get it, Morris. Just chill out, you know? Or like Rondo, you know, probably, you know, untying his shoes or doing whatever stuff Rondo's always going to be up to. It's like, I don't know. Yes. There's a possibility for a little bit of intrigue there, but I do think it's going to just be like, hey, this is really frustrating for Luka. He needs more help. And, you know, I don't want to pre-write the storyline, but I feel like that's the direction it's headed. So you and I are aligned perfectly on these picks, by the way.
Yeah, but, you know, I real quick want to just mention Hawks-Knicks because it's very surprising, number one, that these two teams are meeting in the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's just, it's fresh. It's a lot of players who we've never seen in the postseason before that we've been waiting to see in the postseason. And what's really cool about this series is I don't think there's a lot of stylistic, like, it's not like a stylistic mismatch to me. Like, I think they play pretty similar. It's going to be very slow, very physical. But knowing that one of these two teams, either the Atlanta Hawks or the New York Knicks, are going to be in the second round of the playoffs is pretty cool to think about.
Well, it's also an indictment on the Eastern Conference's quality, but, you know,
would you just...
No, I hear what you say. It's like, it's a classic situation where one fan base is going to get to completely overreact and overrate themselves and set themselves up for a hard fall back to earth next season, Michael. We've seen this story before. I'm with you, though. I actually am. You know, the word you said was fresh, and I like this series. It was number two out of my four, actually. Surprisingly, I would take both of the East series before the other ones because I don't know what to expect. I don't know who's going to be able to out-execute whom late in games. I don't trust Julius Randle. I don't really trust Trae Young. I think the Hawks have better talent. I think I'll pick the Hawks in this series, but I would not do so comfortably or confidently. And it will be, you know, like you said, completely unpredictable and fun. All right, last question for you. And, of course, I saved the meanest for last, and we've touched on it a little bit earlier. But 1 to 10 scale, what is your worry meter for these Boston Celtics against the Washington Wizards? 1 to 10 scale. 10 being you have no confidence whatsoever. 1 being we got this. Westbrook's going to do what he always does in the playoffs. You know, Kemba's going to win the matchup. Tatum's the best player on the court. You know, banner 17 mentality. Where are you at?
I say this with a pinch of someone who believes in the reverse jinx, but also someone who just watches a lot of basketball, and I think I have a good grasp on reality. My number here is 8.
Wow. The truth finally comes out, Michael. You are panicked. This is great. This is great.
I wouldn't call it a panic because it's been just like a slow tumble into sadness. It's like I've been on the decline mentally because of this team for quite a while now. And the expectations have just been so low, particularly ever since Jalen went down, where like I was talking myself into, oh my goodness, like maybe that, you know, they could win the first round series against the Sixers and then who knows what could happen. But now it's just that that's just not going to happen anymore. So it's really sad. And
do you want it over? Do you just want it over, Michael?
You know, getting the 13th pick in the draft would be nice. I think that would be good for the Celtics. It's better than number 17 or 18 or whatever they would otherwise get. So maybe just, yeah, not being in the playoffs at all and not getting swept by the Nets or getting swept by the Sixers, and just kind of heading into next season fresh would be great. I don't know what's going to happen, though. It's just all really sad to think about. And I really appreciate this being the last question that you've ever asked me on this podcast. So thank you.
Just got to twist a knife one final time, Michael. I can't decide. I'm of two minds. First of all, you know, Boston's disappointed me since basically January. in terms of their just cohesiveness, defense, you know, lineup, how they can match up with teams, Kemba, the list goes on. The Jalen one is just a backbreaker, and that's kind of where I'm like, well, this, you know, that was a turning point to me where, like, this is a lost season, right? I can't even talk into them, like, spoiling the Sixers or the stuff that you were mentioning earlier. Once Jalen went down, it's like, all right, all bets are off. Still, though, there's a pride factor with that organization that's going to prevent them from completely missing the playoffs, right? Like, I would hope it would kick in. And if it doesn't, I would hope that there would be some kind of radical changes here, you know? Like, it would be a disaster if they lose to the Wizards and the Pacers and just miss the playoffs. I mean, that is such a mess for the Celtics after going to the Eastern Conference Finals that I hope there would be some level of comeuppance or shakeup or major trades or whatever to just kind of like snap everybody out of it. But I'm not predicting that. That was my one mind. My other mind is hardly anybody clutches the pearls harder than Celtics fans. And is it possible that they're just going to go and and take care of Washington by 10 points and they're the 7 seed? And that could happen too.
That is possible. They still have Tatum. Kemba has looked sensational. Marcus Smart is one of the 6 or 7 greatest players who's ever lived. So, there is potential here.
Your Marcus Smart fan club is just bleeding fellow members right now, though, Michael. I've been seeing a lot of people jumping off that ship lately. Well, you said reverse jinx. Maybe I should reverse jinx it, Michael. As my final goodwill, I think that the Wizards are going to win, but I'm going to predict the Boston Celtics win and get that first-round date with the Nets, and the Nets take care of them in 4 games. How's that sound? Wins all around. You can save face. You made the playoffs. You get to go on vacation in about a week and a half if you're the Celtics. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, happy isn't the word that I would use, but sure, we can go with this scenario. That's fine. It's no big deal.
All right, sounds good, Michael. Well, we've reached the end of another episode of Open Floor. Guys, again, thank you so much for all the kind words, notes, and messages here over the last week. I just wanted to say, you know, when I started the show 5 years ago, I was very much in that typical writer mentality of like, it's a bully pulpit and you just kind of shout your stuff out to the world and people are listening. And what this show and especially the listener community, Michael, taught me is that this is just like one giant sing-along. We're all in this together, holding hands, kumbaya, you know, learning about basketball, talking about basketball together. And I have learned so much from all of our listeners in, you know, basically every continent. I'm not sure we ever got in Antarctica, Michael, but we hit every other continent along the way. And to me, that was always such a big point of pride. Finding basketball diehards in all these different countries who are chiming into the conversation has been so, so rewarding. Guys, I thank you so much. Guys, you can find Michael on Instagram and Twitter at Michael Villas and Victor Pina. I'm on Instagram at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Don't forget, I am still podcasting twice a week on a show called The Greatest of All Talk. Go to greatestofalltalk.com for subscription information. Michael, until next time, I will talk to you.
Talk never, Ben.
Oh, come on, bro.